Senate Labor and Commerce Committee to order at 2:06, and with me today is Senator Giesel, Senator Davis, Senator Menard, Senator Pascavan, and myself, Chair Senator Egan. We will have four bills before us today. We have two bills that we have previously heard and two bills we will be taking public testimony on. The first two bills will be bills that have been previously heard. First, Senate Bill 100, the PERS termination costs, and sponsor Senator Pascavan and Jeff Staff of his staff. I thought he was here.
I know Jake, I believe, is here, but I was just,
Senator Pascavan.
Mr. Chairman, I was just with respect to Senate Bill 100. Since the last hearing, this legislation has received additional support from around the state, and we've provided to all the committee members additional letters of support from the City of Palmer, City of Fairbanks, City of St. Paul, City of Ketchikan, City of Wasilla, and we've received resolutions from the Alaska Municipal League, the City of Nome, the Fairbanks North Star Borough, and the members that were here at the last hearing. Also, we heard support directly from the municipality of Anchorage, from Bristol Bay, and many other places around the state. We've also received, since then, a fiscal note that I'm sure will be thoroughly vetted at the next committee of referral, the Finance Committee. And so, anyway, I think that I know Michael Lamb, the Chief Financial Officer for the Fairbank North Star Borough, and the representative of the AML that is available to answer questions of any of the committee members, if there are any.
Great. Thank you, Senator Pascavan. I'll object so we can ask questions of Senator Pascavan or his staff. And I have people signed up to?
You have people signed up for to ask questions, answer questions.
We do have a representative, I see, of the Alaska Municipal League available to answer questions. And we also have Mike Barnhill again from the Department of Administration to answer questions. Are there questions of the committee? Senator Menard.
Thank you, Senator Egan. Again, I just want to put on the record that this bill has nothing to do with defined benefits and defined contributions.
Okay, thank you, Senator Menard. Further questions for the bill sponsor, Senator Pascavan, or questions for Mr. Barnhill from Department of Administration or representative of the Alaska Municipal League? Seeing none, do I hear a motion? I'll withdraw my objection.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that we move Senate Bill number 100, version /D, from this committee to the next committee of referral with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Thank you, Senator Pascavan. Objection? Seeing none, we'll take a brief at ease. The Senate Labor and Commerce Committee back to order at 2:11, And next bill, we have heard as well, House Bill 119, Aid of Procurement and Projects. This is the bill that we talked about last week, and we were going to work with the administration and develop a committee substitute. That has been done, and to present the CS is my staff, Dana Owen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Dana Owen, staff to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. The changes in the bill have all been discussed before this committee in the last hearing. You may recall that Alaska Housing Finance Corporation had asked to be added on to the bill. We acceded to that. We have the CS that's before you now includes the changes that they would like to have made. My understanding is that these changes were okay with ADA, and as far as I know, they are okay with everybody else in the administration that has an interest in this. The first change you'll notice is on the first page of the bill. We had to amend the title. So lines 7, 8, and 9 now contain a reference to the ADA sections of the statute, or of the bill, I'm sorry. Beyond that, beginning on line 12, section 1 through section 5 are all the new sections of the bill. That goes down through page 3, line 26. All those are the new AHFC sections of the bill. The only other changes occur on the very last page of the bill, page 6. Sections 12, section 13 are new to the bill as a result of the AHFC sections. Section 14 is actually the old effective date of the bill. And now section 15 refers strictly to the AHFC sections of the bill. My understanding is that ADA would like to have an immediate effective date because they have projects that are pending that they would need the authorization for, or need this authorization for. AHFC may have projects, but they didn't express an interest in needing immediate authorization.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Owen. I'll object for questions. Staff, and we do have two folks from ADA in the audience, Stacy Schubert and Ted Leonard, director, is here to answer any other questions, but it's our understanding that the administration is in favor of this committee substitute.
Mr. Chairman, we also have Mark Davis online from ADA, and from AHFC also Mark Romick and Jim Gerker are online to ask to answer any technical questions you might have.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Owen. Questions from the committee? Senator Menard.
Thank you, Mr. Egan. I just wondered if this kind of complicates it or muddies it up a little bit, if it could have been more simplistic, if AHFC would have complied with the same starting date as ADA is. So, it just seems like a little convoluted to wait till July when we're willing to start with the other ADA.
Mr. Chairman, I would certainly defer to AHFC to ask if they would like to have an immediate effective date. There's certainly no reason why we couldn't change the bill if that's the case.
We're just a couple months off. I just don't know why we're making that exact. Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Rowan.
Perhaps we should put that question to AHFC. They didn't express an interest to us when we amended the bill, but we certainly could. Could we ask AHFC that question?
Mr. Davis, are you available to answer that question? Or is there somebody from AHFC that's available?
Stacy Schubert is in the audience, Mr. Chairman, and also Mark Romick and Jim Gerker from AHFC are online.
Ms. Schubert, if you can come forward, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Stacy Schubert, and we would have no objection to that change.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Schubert. Senator Bernard.
Yeah, I'd appreciate that change being in. Do I have to...
Propose it as an amendment, and then we'll send it back to the drafters, and they know our intent.
Mr. Chairman, it's a de minimis change. We could still pass the bill out with that amendment, and I'm sure that the drafter could accommodate.
And our intent is fairly clear.
I think it's very clear. I believe you need a motion to that effect.
Do I have a motion?
Yes,
Sarah Bernard.
I make a motion for a conceptual amendment to make both of it, both entities starting immediately, effective immediately.
Is there objection to the amendment? Seeing none, main motion. Do I hear?
Mr. Chair, I would move that we move the Senate CS for the CS for House Bill number 119. I believe we're dealing with version / I, as amended by the conceptual amendment, which has just passed this committee, with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Great. Thank you, Senator Pasquin. Is there objection? We'll take a brief at ease. Senate Labor and Commerce Committee at 217. Next bill we will take public testimony on, Senate Bill 103, Workers' Compensation for Firefighters. It does have a further referral to finance. Sponsor is here, Senator French, and his staff member, Cindy Smith. If you two would like to come forward, please, and provide your testimony. I'm sorry, yes.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we bring the CS for Senate Bill 103 version / M before this committee for purposes of discussion.
Here's Senator Pasquin. No objection. Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Hollis French. I represent West Anchorage in the State Senate. With me is Cindy Smith, who is the staffer in my office assigned to this bill. Let me just give you an overview of what the bill does. SB 103 really addresses a piece of legislation that we passed in 2008 when the legislature then passed changes, statutory changes to the workers' compensation program to give firefighters the presumption of compensability for certain diseases that they incur because of the work they do that so often leads them to exposure to smoke and chemicals. It was the intent of the legislature that this compensability presumption go to firefighters who'd done two things. They'd served for 7 years and who had received any required physical exams during that seven-year period and had not shown any evidence of the disease. However, a wording change made in one committee as the bill moved through the process had the unanticipated effect of narrowing the scope of this compensability presumption to only those firefighters who had had an initial physical examination at the time of their hire. This effect was not intentional, wasn't discussed in committee, never came to light until the Workers' Compensation Board began to implement regulations to put the statute into effect and began to hear cases brought to it asking that the disability presumption be applied. Recognizing the problem, the Workers' Compensation Board passed a resolution supporting an amendment such as the one that we're bringing you today in this bill to give the presumption to those firefighters who've worked for 7 years, had all the required exams, have shown no evidence of disease. In addition to their efforts, you have a letter that may have just been delivered to you today from the National Council on Compensation Insurance. They've reviewed the bill. They believe that the cost impact is minimal. Indeed, they think that we may save money by passing this bill by avoiding future litigation costs. The second change the bill makes is to clarify that the law applies to state as well as municipal firefighting agencies. That picks up a few firefighters who work for the University of Alaska there in Fairbanks. The original bill was referred to a definition that was on the books at the time, didn't include state firefighters, so we made just a two-word change to the existing definition by adding the words state or municipal firefighters to the existing definition. We tried very hard to not make this a bill. We tried to do it through regulation. I sent a letter several months ago to our legislative legal department saying, you know, can't we do this by regulation? And they reviewed the regulations very carefully, said that it just would never fly that way. This was the only route. And so, you know, I bring this bill to you for consideration and happy to answer any questions you may have about it.
Great. Thank you very much, Senator Friend. Senator Pascan.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that because there was a concern that the University of Alaska Fire Department might be excluded because it's somewhat in a an unusual class by itself. And as I'm understanding, that it's unquestioned that the UAF Fire Department is now included within this coverage.
Through the chair, Senator Pascan, that's my understanding as well. If you look at page 2 of the bill, where we define firefighter, it means a person employed by a state or a municipal fire department, and they're absolutely a subdivision of the state, and so I think they're covered.
And then the, as I see on page 2, lines 23 through 28, that's to make sure that the retroactive component, so that we actually undo the problem that was unintentionally created.
Through the chair, Senator Pascan, that's the meat of the bill. The meat of the bill is page 2, lines 23 through 28, that exactly do what we all thought we were doing in the first place, which was to get firefighters the presumption of compensability as long as they had served for 7 years, not been sick during those years, and had been given and had taken every exam they were offered.
For the question, Senator Pascan.
Just making sure the record's clear that we're
I appreciate
covering
that.
The guys we want to cover and we're solving the problem that needs to be solved.
Great. Further questions for the bill sponsor or Ms. Smith? Seeing none, we do have one person signed up to testify from the Anchorage LIO, Law Henderson from the Municipality of Anchorage. Mr. Henderson, are you available? If you can state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
My name is Law Henderson. I am the Workers' Compensation Administrator for the Municipality of Anchorage.
Right. Thank you, and provide your testimony, please.
Good afternoon, Chairman Egan and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity if you allowed me to speak here today. The Municipality of Anchorage opposes the amendment to AS 2330-121 before you today for several reasons, although I don't have the M version. We're trying to get that now. As you may recall, in 2008, the legislature enacted this presumption to give firefighters a certain protection for diseases that were considered work-related. The statute took effect in August of 2008. To trigger that presumption, the firefighter must establish where they were given a qualifying medical examination before firefighting, and it did not show evidence of the disease, and were given an annual medical exam during each of the first 7 years of employment that did not show evidence of the disease. The first problem with the legislation is that the municipality, most like most municipalities, did not offer annual exams back in 1986. Physical examinations were not even mandatory until OSHA came in late 1989. Moreover, testing for these diseases listed in the statute were not even done or available in most cases until the 90s, and testing did not establish, in fact today, some testing still cannot establish some of these cancers. Moreover, the municipality does not even know what constitutes the medical examination required under the statute. The statute directed the Department of Labor to define the type and extent of medical examination needed to trigger the presumption and to create from a form for use during these examinations. No regulations is currently in effect defining the type and extent of the examination needed. Although the legislation was passed in 08, no regulation was presented to the Lieutenant Governor until early this year, which was signed by the Lieutenant Governor in February, and it's not to take effect until later this month. No form has yet to be developed by the Department of Labor. Thus, the record is devoid of medical examinations necessary to trigger the presumption. It might exist going forward, but it does not presently exist. Despite the lack of the needed medical examinations, the Alaska Workers' Compensation Board has nevertheless found in favor of at least one firefighter simply based on his statement that he had had a qualifying medical examination. No medical report was offered, and it probably simply does not exist. This is one case alone, which will probably cost the city in upwards of $250,000. Another, the case in the municipality may exceed $1.6 million. And we have several other cases that are pending. In addition, because of AS 2330-121, the municipality is now unable to insure any of its firefighters for losses over $1 million, as it has been historically, for all workers' compensation claims. While the municipality has self-insured retention level of $1 million per workers' compensation loss per occurrence, when a fire, when an injury to a firefighter, it is compelled now to pay the first $2 million of the loss, even if the loss is unrelated to a disease listed under AS 2330-121. Thus, the legislation has created an unfunded mandate on the municipality, and I assume similar entities throughout the state. Smaller entities may be unable to fund a self-insurance program, as they may be unable to fund the first $2 million of a loss. Cost and loss of insurance is not our only concern. The other is a lack of medical evidence supporting the causation. The Alaska Workers' Compensation Board has held that if a condition is one of those listed, medical opinions or studies to the contrary are insufficient to rebut the presumption. Thus, this legislation is provided, as applied by the board, has created an irrebuttable presumption. According to the American Cancer Society, cancer is now the second leading cause of death in the United States, and one out of every two Americans will be diagnosed with it at some point in their lives. The question is whether firefighting activities put one at a greater risk to these cancers. 24 states have enacted presumption laws similar to our AS 2330-121. The impact of these statutes and the medical research regarding firefighters were recently analyzed in April of 2009 in a report by the National League of Cities entitled Assessing Firefighting Cancer Presumption Laws and Current Firefighting Cancer Research. The report points to many problems associated with the legislation. Loss of insurance, as the municipality has experienced, is one. Another is a lack of medical research establishing a causal relationship between firefighting and a specific type of cancer. According to the report, of the thousands of cancer studies taking place from 1995 to 2008, only 17 studies looked at firefighters as a possible risk factor for contracting cancer. The research concluded there was a lack of substantive scientific evidence currently available to determine that firefighters face greater risks than the general population. Yet the employers of firefighters are compelled to pay for these cancers based on AS 2330-121. Another concern is equity. There are questions about fairness of one class of employees obtaining expanded benefits, while other municipal employees, such as sanitation workers, automotive fleet personnel, and others, may also be exposed to similar hazards as firefighters. Yet they are not covered under AS 2330-121. Alaska, however, has a presumption for all employees under AS 2330-120. That presumption has served employees well since statehood. Thus, the municipality would favor the repeal of AS 2330-121. Short of that, the municipality would urge you to reject the proposed amendment, as it would make every firefighter who ever developed cancer entitled to the benefits despite the lack of available testing, as the examination would not show evidence of the disease during the first 7 years of employment, as the testing was not available.
Mr. Henderson, can you summarize for the committee, please?
Pardon?
Can you summarize for the committee, please?
Down to the last few sentences okay. Here. I'm sorry. Okay. At least going forward, these tests are available to some of these cancers. For others, this testing is either cost prohibitive or simply unavailable for the problems existed. Let's not make a bad situation worse. We request the amendment be rejected. thank you for allowing me to speak, and if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them if I can.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Henderson. Questions for Mr. Henderson? Senator Pascod.
Did you or the municipality object to this in 2008 when it was passed?
Through the chair to Senator Pascod, no, we did not. We did in 2007.
So it passed in 2008, and this amendment is just to correct a problem that if it had been an unintentional problem, do you agree?
No, do not.
Okay, further questions for Mr. Henderson? Senator Menard.
Chairman, just for information, Mr. Henderson, and I apologize if I – now, what department – are you a risk manager for the municipality? I missed what your what you head up with the municipality.
Through the chair, Senator Menard, I am the workers' comp administrator or coordinator for the municipality of Anchorage.
Okay, thank you.
Great. Thank you, Senator Menard.
It is a risk management office department.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Henderson. Further questions from Mr. Henderson from the committee? Mr. Henderson, thank you very much for providing testimony. Also available for questions, Trina Hikas of Municipality of Anchorage. Also, Rachel Witte, Department of Law on the Anchorage LIO. And Eric Croft of Anchorage, representing himself. Welcome, Representative Croft. And again, they're available to answer questions. We do have people in the audience that would like to testify. Tom Westcott from Eagle River. Mr. Westcott, please. If you can state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Tom Westcott. I'm the president of the Alaska Professional Firefighters. We represent firefighters from Kotzebue to Ketchikan. I came here today to support the committee substitute for SB 103. I would echo a lot of what Senator French said today. Basically, this is a new version that doesn't change the intent of the original law. It captures the intent and clears up the process. There's two aspects, the physicals and the definition. I could go into the physical of why that language is needed to be changed if you have questions later. The definition captures groups, as Senator French said, like the UAF Fire Department, their full-time employees, and I believe that Chief Shragi has sent the committee a letter expressing his support for these changes. One thing to address what the gentleman from the municipality said is there is a standard for firefighter physicals. It's NFPA 1582, and OSHA adopts NFPA standards. So some of what was said was not quite accurate. Also to note, at the time this legislation originally passed, we definitely had to demonstrate the scientific studies backing up the link for cancer to our profession. What they said is true, we're all at someday maybe going to face cancer, but when you get it at 40 or 38, that's the difference. And it's due to those exposures, and the science is there to back it up. It was shown over and over in this process. People did not just support this legislation because we walked down here. They looked at the evidence and what we had at the time.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Westcott, and thank you very much for coming down here to testify. Questions for Mr. Westcott of the committee? Seeing none. Thank you very much for testifying.
Thank you very much.
We also have Paul Hanby of the Alaska Professional Firefighters to testify as well. Mr. Hanby, if you can state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Senator Egan, Chairman, and committee members, my name is Paul Hanby. I'm a career firefighter for Juneau and also a member of the Alaska State Firefighters Association. What I wanted to convey to you is, under the current language in the in this bill, I would be potentially omitted from protection. and because my I had an extensive pre-employment physical, but our department, like many departments, each department has latitude to determine their own required physicals, and during budgetary times, these physicals on an annual basis can be very prohibitively expensive, so many municipalities don't require them. The change here would be, would make me, I'm healthy as a horse, but I would be covered in the unlikely event I was ever stricken with one of these named carcinogens or something that was related to my occupation. So that's, if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them. That's my message.
So, Paul, or Mr. Hamby, you support 103?
Yes, okay. Very much so.
Thank you. Questions from the committee for Mr. Hamby? Great. Thank you very much for coming forward and testifying. We also have Mike Monigal from the Department of Labor available to answer questions from the committee if the committee has any. Seeing no one else signed up to testify, Senator French, would you like to offer some final words of wisdom for us?
Just a couple. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for having me back up. First, I think it's easy to forget the crucial role that firefighters play in protecting our communities every single day of the week, all the way around the year. And we have known for years that their exposure to noxious chemicals that they see in the course of their employment makes them sick. We studied that very, very carefully in 2007, studied it very carefully in 2008, and I was disappointed in the testimony from the municipality of Anchorage on this topic, because we went over that very, very carefully when we passed this bill. Firefighters take risks for us, and all we do is establish a rebuttable presumption of compensability when they get sick. This covers them when they're on the job. Once they leave the employment of the municipality, once they retire, they're on their own for their cancers that they develop later on. This is when they're in the course of their working career. I would point out that this bill got a zero fiscal note from the state risk management. It got a letter of support from the National Council on Compensation Insurance. So the last thing I'll say is that we looked high and low through the record to find out what supported the amendment that carved out and required that initial exam. There was not a single word of testimony supporting it. Mr. Henderson knows differently. I'd love to have him bring that to my attention. But we read the transcripts through several times looking for an explanation for that change and could never find it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Senator French. Questions from the committee for Senator French? Seeing none. Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 103? Seeing none. Senator French, thank you very much for presenting the bill. Ms. Smith, thank you very much for attending and helping to present. That closes public testimony. We will bring the bill up before the end of session to pass it on to a further referral. Thank you very much again, Senator French. We have next up Senate Bill 116, Workers' Comp, Collective Bargaining, and Mediation. This bill also has a further referral to Finance. Mr. Owen of staff at Center Labor and Commerce and my staff will present the bill, Mr. Owen. And it's our intention to hold this bill as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, again, I'm Dana Owen, staff to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. You may have received a draft of this bill earlier. It was an oversight of mine that I included it in your packets. However, the draft that you may have gotten is identical to the final bill that you have in your packets. Anyway, that's the backslash I version that was introduced. Mr. Chairman, this...
I'm sorry. Yeah, we have to bring the bill forward. Oh. Senator Baskin.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that we bring Senate Bill number 16, version backslash I, before the Labor and Commerce Committee.
Objection, Mr. Rowan.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, the concept for this bill was brought to us by a number of different people who have had problems or recognize that there have been problems with the workers' compensation system as it's currently in existence. As you know, workers' compensation was originally established in order to bring speedy, timely conclusion to workers' compensation claims, to injuries that workers received on the job. It provided for workers a means to be treated for their injuries with dispatch, and for the employers it brought some sense of stability and finality. They knew that they couldn't be sued, and they were also promised that they would have a reasonably cost-effective workers' compensation premium. And we have heard anecdotally for many years now that workers have had trouble, had great difficulty, in fact, concluding their claims. We know from anecdotal evidence that some workers, and I believe we could probably get testimony today to this effect, who have had their cases drag on for several years before they're concluded. We know from repeated contacts by employers that workers' compensation costs are viewed as being excessive. This idea that was brought to us is, by its proponents and by the history that it's had in other states, it has had a history of both making those claims, the time to conclude those claims, shorter, and at the same time it has also reduced costs. I believe you'll hear testimony today from California and possibly also from Minnesota, two of the leading states who have had many years of experience now with the kind of workers' compensation system that this bill would allow. In a nutshell, pardon me, in a nutshell, what this bill would do is allow, within the current workers' compensation system, for an employer and a group of employees who are represented by a collective bargaining unit to establish beforehand the terms upon which their workers' compensation their workers' compensation claims will be resolved. One of the key parts of this is that they would be directed toward mediation immediately under the current system. That mediation takes place only after a series of conflicts. The two parties could agree in the beginning to the doctor who would initially see the patient, and also to the doctor who would provide a second opinion. Currently, the system generally takes three physicians. This would eliminate one of the physicians that's currently involved. And the net effect of all of this is to reduce the costs and to shorten the time. There are other people waiting to testify, excuse me, who can provide you with more detailed history and certainly more expert testimony than I can, but that's a summation of what the bill does.
Thank you, Mr. Rowan. Questions of Mr. Rowan from the committee before we take public testimony? Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Owen, in our packet we have a colored chart that looks like this.
Yes.
And it sounds different. It appears different than what you described. I see two independent medical evaluations in our present system. I see none over here. And yet you just described two. I'm confused.
Mr. Chairman, I think the confusion may just be in the way I've described it. There would be under current workers' compensation, you could get three different medical examinations. Under the bill as it's proposed, my understanding is you could have, again, this is by agreement between the two parties, you could have as few as two. Is that?
Sir Giesel.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. That's not what I see described in the chart, nor do I see that language in the bill. Can you take me to that location in the bill?
Mr. Chairman, I think what I'm describing is the result of some of the ways that this language has been, or that this concept has been approached in other states. There are people who are waiting online who could testify and probably give you a clearer idea. My understanding is this is an example of one of the ways that the two parties under collective bargaining could bargain and come to an agreement on how they would handle the claims.
Senator Giesel.
All right. I'll switch to a different topic, and I'll wait for those other people to answer those questions. On page 1 of the bill, line 13 and 14, this is section 1, number 1, B, bravo. Mediation shall be conducted by a hearing officer or other classified employee of the Division of Workers' Compensation. Now, help me if I'm making an incorrect assumption here, but I'm assuming that the employee themselves are a classified employee of some form of whatever, and they're going to be mediated by another classified employee?
Mr. Chairman, yes, under the terms of the bill, what we envision is that hearing officers currently in the division will be the ones that are that do the mediation. I believe the language is included just to give the division some flexibility over who those hearing officers might be.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Gisel. Senator Bassvet.
If I understand, this applies not only to this applies to all workers around the state, or just, in other words, applies to everybody?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that's true. All workers who are covered under collective bargaining agreements.
Further questions, Senator Bassvet? None. Further questions for Mr. Owen? Great, thanks, Dana. And as soon as we get the list, we will call on, we do know that we have folks that have signed up to testify on Senate Bill 116. And the lucky winner to testify first is Steve Rank, Iron Workers International. Mr. Rank, are you online?
Thank you, Chairman Egan, committee members. For the record, my name is Steve Rank. I represent the Iron Workers International and IMPACT, which is a labor management cooperative trust fund. I'm based out of California. In 2003, labor and management got together and developed a collectively bargained workers' compensation program for the state of California. We had experienced extreme medical costs, extreme litigation, and our employers and our workers were both frustrated with the system. We use the enabling legislation in the state of California, and it allows employers and labor representatives to sit down and pre-designate medical providers so that our injured workers are provided the best medical attention, not the worst. These programs are voluntary. It does not require any insurance carrier to participate. These programs do not require any particular employer to participate. They are purely voluntary in nature. They're designed to improve the delivery of medical benefits to injured workers, period. There's nothing in this bill that takes away any benefits from injured workers, and that has to be made very clear. All it does is enhance it so that workers don't have to wait 6 or 9 months to hear about their claim. There is a cooperative efforts of the insurance carriers, the employers, and the labor representatives to expedite these claims to make sure their workers are attended to, that their questions are answered by a representative called an ombudsman, and that person is available 24/7 to answer any questions to injured workers. We have published statistics from the state of California as well as Minnesota that these type of programs have reduced medical costs, they reduce lost time days away from work, they return workers back to work sooner, and it also reduces cases of litigation. And that's all we attempt to do, was to give injured workers a method to where we can treat them and get them back in the workplace without having to result to unnecessary litigation, and be at the mercy of a system that can't answer their questions in many cases. I have on behind me is our employers from the state of California and Michigan that have participated in these programs. They've developed them, and we have seen workers and employers reduce their operating costs, their insurance costs, by the effective results of these type of programs. Thank you very much. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you very much for standing by and taking the time to testify, Mr. Rank. Questions for Mr. Rank? CNN, again, thank you very much for testifying today. Also off-net, we have Gregory Cusera, Alaska Iron Workers. Mr. Cusera, are you available? Greg, are you available to testify? We'll hold Mr. Cusera. Next to testify, Kevin Grefferson, Union Construction Workers. Kevin, are you available?
Yes, I am available.
Great.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Loud and clear, if you can give your name and affiliation for the record, please, and provide your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Chairman Egan and committee members. My name is Kevin Grefferson. I am the program administrator for the Union Construction Workers Compensation Program in Minnesota. I developed this program back in 1997. On behalf of a Labor Management Board of Trustees, and I've been running the program ever since. The program I administer came out of the 1995 statutes that Minnesota passed, allowing for these alternative, collectively bargained workers' compensation programs. The reason I've been asked to testify is to talk about the experience we've had over the last 13 years in running this program, and some of the evaluation data that's been done recently by the Minnesota Office of the Legislative Auditor, who studied our program and compared it to the state-run workers' compensation system. I'm happy to say that we've had significantly improved results in terms of injured workers receiving benefits on a timely basis as a result of having an ombudsperson on call to assist both the employer, the insurance carrier, and the injured employee in resolving any issues that come up in questions about viability of the claim. We've seen a reduction on average of approximately 40% in the average cost of a workers' compensation claim going through our system as compared to claims for a similar injury in a similar occupation going through the state of Minnesota's workers' compensation system. The biggest reason for that is that we have pre-selected the physicians, the vocational rehabilitation counselors, and the attorneys who serve as mediators and arbitrators who interact with our injured participants and our contractors. There was a question earlier about the independent medical examinations, and what I'd like to say about that is that the language in your statute, which I have reviewed, gives the Labor Management Committee authority to determine how they want to perform independent medical examination. So the woman who was speaking is correct. The language about that isn't in your bill. Instead, it's giving labor and management authority to determine how they want to do that. And having run this program for the last 13 years and speaking about this across the country, this is really the legislature empowering labor and management to figure out a better way to deliver the same set of statutory benefits utilizing people that they have mutual trust with and have the ability to work with, who understand the construction industry and the unique aspects that that industry faces. Any questions on behalf of the committee?
Great. Thank you, Mr. Grefferson. Questions? Great. Thank you very much for taking the time and testifying all the way from Minnesota.
You're welcome.
Next to testify from the Fairbanks LIO, Fred Brown, Healthcare Cost Management Corporation of Alaska. Mr. Brown, if you can state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Thank you. My name is Fred Brown. I'm the Executive Director of the Healthcare Cost Management Corporation of Alaska. We submitted a letter of support for the legislation. I won't restate the letter as you already have it in front of you, but I will just mention that that we given our name, are focused on controlling health care costs. And many of you who may have looked at the backup information associated with House Bill 13 have seen the charts that talk about how Alaska is among the highest cost states in the union for delivery of workers' compensation benefits generally, and specifically with respect to medical costs. 75% of the total costs of workers' compensation are medical. And so, you know, we are focused on trying to find ways in which to control the rising health care costs. I'll just mention briefly that also you may have seen the 2009 report of the Workers' Compensation Medical Services Review Committee, and on page 10 they made the observation that even though there is the opportunity to create preferred provider networks, there's no incentive to do so because there's no requirement in the statute that providers participate. So anyway, we see this as an opportunity that labor and management together can negotiate with providers, such as to institute a preferred provider network if they choose to do so. With that, I'll yield my time to the other experts. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Brown. Questions for Mr. Brown, Mr. Senator Pascman?
Sure. Fred, good afternoon to you. Do you have any expectation as if this process were to be followed, what the magnitude of potential savings might be?
Through our organization, we oftentimes are able to negotiate discount pricing in the neighborhood of 50 or 60% discounts. I'm not saying that that would apply all across the board here, but I can see opportunities for significant savings.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Brown. Thank you, Mr. Senator Pascan. Further questions for Mr. Brown? Fred, thank you very much for standing by and testifying. Next to testify, Laird Grantham, also from the Fairbanks LIO, Carpenter Local 1242. Mr. Grantham, your name and affiliation for the record, please, and provide your testimony.
My name is Laird Grantham. I'm with Carpenter's Local 1243 here in Fairbanks. I'm here today, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 116. From 2005 to 2009, Alaska has had the highest workers' comp rates in the nation. These rates make Alaska the very least competitive state in the union for conducting business, according to a CNBC feature report. Because of the high cost of workers' compensation insurance, we see more shady employers having no insurance or misclassifying their employees to cut costs and cheat the industry. This bill will allow for a quicker resolution to a claim and at a much lower cost to all parties. Just yesterday, my office received a request for information about a workers' comp claim date back to 1988. Why should any one individual or companies have to wait that long for any type of closure? The time is now to allow this voluntary program in the state of Alaska. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Grantham. Questions? Seeing none, thank you very much for staying around and providing testimony. And now going back here to the committee room, we have Mike Monagle, Department of Labor, available to answer questions in case we need to ask Mr. Monagle questions. We also have, although I don't see him, Paul Grossi, Ironworkers. He's way back there. Mr. Grossi, if you can come forward and provide your testimony, please, for the record.
Mike Monagle also.
You want to hear from Mike?
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Grossi, your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Mr. Chair and the committee, for the record, I'm Paul Grossi, and I'm here representing the Alaska State Pipe Trades and the Iron Workers. Most of my testimony was actually was covered in this, but I would say that I think all of you have had some experience with constituent complaints about either from employers for the cost of the system, or employees and how cumbersome the system is and how difficult it is to navigate through the system. I know in a former life I was a director of workers' compensation, so I used to get these complaints too, so I know what this is about. But what I would say is this bill, and to answer maybe you know, some of the questions. This bill is just enabling language. It will allow these groups under a collective bargaining system to try to deal with some of the cost and some of the inefficiencies and some of the, you know, the difficulties in getting treatment. It will allow them to develop a system to improve it. It's just enabling language. It, you know, we know we have problems, you know, not just by the complaints from your constituents, but if you look at all the reports in your file, you'll see that the costs are going up the roof. And it was a time when I first started a workers' comp that medical costs were 30% of the entire cost of the system. Now they're 75% of the cost of the system. So there's a drastic need to address some of these issues. And this bill enables parties to try. You could look at it as, the committee could look at it as it allows them to do pilot projects to see if we can come up with improvements to the system and see if we could come up with ways of dealing with these. It'll allow them to do it. Both sides will be represented. The employers' insurance companies will be represented. The employees will be represented. So with that, I would just say that, you know, this is, there's a big problem. It's you know, there's a Chinese proverb that says the journey of a 1,000 miles is started with the first step. This bill provides the first step to that journey, and I would urge the committee to take that step.
Thank you, Mr. Grassi. Questions for Mr. Grassi? Paul, thank you very much for sticking around and testifying. We also will hear from Mr. Monagle at the end of public testimony, just so don't leave, Mike. We also have Law Henderson representing the municipality of Anchorage. Mr. Henderson would like to testify as well on Senate Bill 116. Mr. Henderson, your name and affiliation again for the record, please.
Chairman Egan, my name is Law Henderson. I'm the Workers' Compensation Coordinator for the Municipality of Anchorage out of the Risk Management Department. I would like to thank you for the opportunity you've given me to speak to you regarding SB 116. The Municipality of Anchorage has 8 separate bargaining units and 1 exempt unit. SB 116, the municipality, could very likely end up governed by 2 separate workers' compensation systems, one with the due process protections, the current system, and one without. Let me explain. I'd like to begin by noting Section 1 of the bill is fine. It simply codifies the Division of Workers' Compensation, what they've been doing for quite effectively for about a decade. This section creates new workers' compensation system through the collective bargaining process. I'm sorry, this problem is Section 2, which creates a new workers' compensation system through the collective bargaining process. Under 2332.85A sub 1, the division would need to hire more employees devoted to this alternative or parallel system, the other classified employees. Beyond that, the statute is fairly vague. It's our understanding, however, that the system envisioned under SB 116 is that undertaken by or in Minnesota. That system, however, strips the parties of discovery and selection rights afforded under the current system. For example, under the current system, an employer may obtain an independent medical evaluation to determine whether an injury is work-related or not. If not work-related, whether disability, permanent impairment, medical, vocational, or other benefits are warranted under the Alaska Workers' Compensation Act. Under the system envisioned on SB 116, the employer has no right to an independent medical examination. Without medical evidence to support a denial of benefits, an employer is prevented by law from denying benefits. If denied without such evidence, an employer faces a 25% penalty, and the adjuster faces possible loss of their license. Thus, under SB 116 system, an employer is unable to develop contrary medical evidence and is thus compelled to simply write checks for benefits, having lost any mechanism for testing the validity of the employee's claim. Under the current system, the Alaska Workers' Compensation Board itself may request an independent medical evaluation by a physician of its choosing. Under SB 116, no such evaluation is permitted. Under the current system, the employee is free to treat with whomever they choose. Under SB 116, they can only select from their list of developed by their trust. Under the current system, there are numerous vocational counselors available to the employee. Under SB 116, an employee is limited to those developed by the trust. The only similarity between the two systems is who pays for them, insurers and self-insured, thereby increasing the cost of the overall workers' compensation system. In short, SB 116 would develop a parallel system devoid of the constitutional due process protections and choices available under our current system. In addition, it would be paid for by the same parties who already pay for the current system under the Workers Safety and Compensation Program developed under AS 2305-067, thereby further burdening the overall cost of the workers' compensation system. The municipality opposes such legislation. Thank you. I will try to answer any questions you may have if I can do that.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Henderson. Questions for Mr. Henderson? Again, thank you for your testimony. And I'm assuming that you, when you're talking about opposing, you oppose Senate Bill 116. Is that correct, the municipality?
Yes, sir.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Henderson. We do have one more individual that's signed up to testify, Dan McEwen. Representing California Field Iron Negotiated Camp or Compensation Program. Mr. McEwen, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Thank you. Give your name and affiliation for the record, please, and provide your testimony.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is David McEwen. I'm the president of California Directors in California. I'm also the co-chair of the California Field Iron Workers Negotiated Workers' Comp Program. We developed the program, as Steve Rank said, in 2003 because, similar to Alaska, our workers' comp program was out of control. We had caused as an employer, we're paying 43% of our base wage for workers' compensation. And that was putting us, mainly making us non-competitive. With the change to that and some legislative changes we had in California, we are currently paying about 14% of our base wage for workers' compensation. So there's been a substantial savings. We, too, I heard the testimony of the gentleman from the municipalities there. We have a parallel program in California where we have some non-signatory employees and we have signatory employees that are covered through this program. We don't find that a burden whatsoever. It has worked well for us. The workers covered under the negotiated program are in favor of. I have not heard one complaint of the folks that had it. Our delivery of medical care is a lot better than it used to be. In the old days, if somebody were injured, an example would be somebody with a rotator cuff. Prior to having the workers' comp program, an injured worker had a rotator cuff. It was 6 months before he would actually get authorization for surgery. Under our program, with the PPO doctors we have, we recently had a case where the guy got authorization within 2 weeks, was back to work within 6 months, which is faster than they would have got authorization under the other program. The costs are considerably less, so much so that as an incentive, we've actually paid our guys more for temporary disability because we have a cost savings with that. We have the attorneys that are involved in the process. There's nothing in our process that will prohibit an attorney from being involved. So if they want representation, they can have it. Work comp attorneys can get involved at any time they want to, representing the workers' comp carriers. So I don't think there's anything in our program that prohibits those folks from getting involved, and we've not had any discussion. There's no pushback from the attorneys involved on either side. We haven't had any, that I'm aware of, any of the employees that have covered on the program have any complaints. It's just a much better way of doing business, and it's a cost savings for everybody. It's also a cost savings for the state. It lessens the burden on their workers' comp appeals process. In California, if you have an appeal, it takes anywhere from 1 to 4 years to go through the process. Under the ADR program that we have, the alternate dispute resolution, they get mediation in, in 2 to 6 weeks, and if it does go to arbitration, which is very rare, it takes another 2 to 4 weeks to get there. So it's a much faster process, and again, the cost savings are phenomenal, and everybody wins under this. The workers are much happier with the process. In the old days, I can't tell you how many calls we took from our injured workers trying to get through the process. With an ombudsman that knows what he's doing, they can walk the guy through the process, and he gets resolution much faster than through the statutory system. That's all I have to say. Any questions?
Great. Thank you very much. Yes, we do have a question for you, Mr. Kuhn, and sorry to butcher your first name, but
that's okay.
It's a long-distance relationship here. Yeah. Senator Pasvan.
Yeah, couple of questions. How long is the particular program that you're speaking about, how long has it been in operation?
We've 8 years.
All right, and where are the savings found? In what categories are the savings located?
One, in the process, it's much quicker resolution to the problems. And then also in the what we've done for the selection of the physicians, we've run through a PPO program that we use for our, the ironworkers have a PPO program through our health and welfare system. We use a similar program. We've selected doctors that will work, that work with the workers' comp. Some of them don't want to work with the workers' comp folks, so we've eliminated them from the system. But for the most part, it's the same doctors the guy would see on his own. So they go through them, so that's a reduced cost. We have an agreement with them where their costs are probably discounted by 20 to 30%, and we have a quicker delivery system. If somebody wants to go to a specialist, that is probably takes about a third the time it would under the statutory program. We also see it through our reduction for us is with reduced costs, our mod rates are substantially reduced. So we see that if the cost of a claim takes for workers' comp medical care, usually it's cut, again, several percentage points. So that reduces our costs and our claim cost. But also the takes a lot faster to resolve those issues. An injured worker under the old system, if it took 6 months, it probably takes as many weeks under this system to get back. Get the medical care and to get back on. So there's a substantial savings there in different disability.
Senator Pasvan, continue.
Thank you. And then the reduction of the base rate was 43%, as I understand, then 8 years ago, and it's now currently 14%. Is that accurate?
That's our experience for our firm only. I can't tell you what it is for other firms, but that's what our experience has been. Okay.
And is that reduction in the percentage of base rate, is that monitored by private insurers? In other words, how does your system work?
We have a state rating bureau, and the state rates us. So we'll go through, and for our modification rate, they'll rate us. And they base our rating on our cost per claim and number of claims. So we have had a reduction in that. We've also had, for our category, which is steel construction over two stories, we've had a reduction in that cost, a dramatic reduction, as a result of the ADR. So that they set the rate for that particular one, and that's been part of the reduction also.
And your use of the term ADR, is that, are you meaning alternative dispute resolution?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Senator Pasvan. Further questions for Mr. Kuhn? Gren, thank you very much for hanging on and providing testimony. And last person available is Mike Monigal, Department of Labor. If you'd like to come forward, please, to answer questions. And we're due out of this room at 3:20, so Mr. Monigal, you have 5 minutes.
My name is Mike Monigal. I'm the director of the Division of Workers' Compensation and would attempt to answer any questions that you might have about this bill.
Great. Thanks, Mike. And before we ask questions, does the administration support or oppose this bill?
The administration takes no position on this legislation.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Monagle. Questions for Mr. Monagle. Senator Pascan.
You know, ultimately kind of getting right to the heart of it, as I see these two components two sections of the bill is different types of alternative dispute resolution models. And do you see a benefit in both of the models within Senate Bill 116?
Through the chair, I'm not quite sure we mean both models. There's an alternate dispute resolution process which includes mediation, and if mediation's not successful, then they can go to arbitration.
Maybe I should be more precise. In other words, in Section 1, I see mediation that any worker injured under any circumstance can, where it says may attend mediation, so that's the one method. And then the second section talks about collective bargaining agreements where any employer dealing with a collective bargaining agent, if they want to, can reach an agreement as to an alternative dispute resolution mechanism. So those are the two, and my question is whether it's a non-represented worker or a represented worker, do you see the benefit of the alternative dispute resolution process of both methods within the process?
Through the chair, let me speak to the Section 1. In fact, mediation has been taking place in the workers' comp system for a number of years. I think last year we mediated approximately 40 complex cases with about 90% satisfactory settlement, where both parties entered into a settlement agreement that was approved by the board. So I do think that mediation is a valuable tool that can often lead to reduced disputes between the parties and comes to quick resolution. As far as the second section, it also has a mediation and arbitration process. It's a little difficult for me to answer because the Section 2 talks about the alternate dispute resolution process being set out in a collective bargaining agreement. Our workers' comp officers mediate terms under the Workers' Compensation Act. They don't mediate terms under a collective bargaining agreement. So it would be difficult for me to answer how they would respond to disputes between parties under a collective bargaining agreement if those terms are not set out in the Workers' Comp Act. So to that, I really can't give a specific response to.
Maybe asking a fundamental question. Are all workers in Alaska currently covered by workers' compensation statutes?
Through the chair, yes, every employer, employee in the state is covered under the Workers' Comp Act. I should correct myself, with a few statutory exemptions.
Do you view Section 2 as an exception to the workers' compensation coverage, or do you, in other words, what I'm trying to get to is the alternative dispute resolution, if it's a viable cost savings method, what would be a better method than this, if there is one?
Through the chair, I don't come before the committee knowing alternate possibilities for resolving disputes in the workers' comp system. Again, I think that the Section 2 allows employers and employees to come up with a solution to disputes through a collective bargaining process. Now, that may mirror the Workers' Comp Act. It may have provisions unanticipated. I would think, like our current experience is, that a mediation process can bring quicker resolution. But again, I can't speak specifically to the terms of a collective bargaining agreement because it may very well be different in design than what is currently set out in the State Workers' Comp Act.
Senator Geisel.
I do have questions for him, but if you have a deadline for adjournment, then perhaps it needs to be done next time we can.
Right.
Because I do have several questions for him that are going to go past your
deadline. Okay, then we'll continue public testimony at our next hearing. Mr. Monagle, thank you very much for showing up, and thank you, everyone, for...
We just got information that the CNRA meeting afterwards is canceled.
Okay. Hang on, Mike. Don't leave. We've just been told that the Community and Regional Affairs meeting scheduled for this room has been canceled, but I'm aware that other senators have other obligations. So would you like to continue this here to ask questions or continue it at our next meeting? It's up to you.
I have to research a couple questions. So I have to
continue. Okay, it's up to members, so we'll continue it.
No, I mean, I'd like to.
You could answer her question, couldn't you?
Can he answer your questions?
No, I mean.
No, he can answer Senator Geisel's, and then I'll ask mine next time.
Okay.
This is here.
Well, as long as you're here, Mr. Monagle, but you may have to come back. Is it the pleasure of the committee to continue the public testimony with Mr. Monagle? Now, if you have
Fine. Let's.
Senator Geisel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're back on the hot seat, Mike.
Mr. Monagle, what would you describe is broken in the Work Comp Act right now?
Through the chair, I think the bill does a good job of identifying some areas in the workers' comp system. As you use the term broken, let me preface my remarks, I think, by saying, first of all, we receive about 20 to 25,000 reports of injury every year. And the vast majority of these cases, the injured worker receives speedy medical treatment, receives disability benefits timely, and it's a small percentage of these cases that actually end up in these complex disputes. But they do get a lot of attention. I think medical costs in the system are high, as prior testimony has alluded to. Our dispute resolution process, on average, in the last year that I looked, took about 2 years from the time a dispute has begun to the time that there's a final decision. Some cases it can take longer, other cases can take shorter, but that's the average. Our reemployment training process certainly could be much improved. And finally, I think one of the areas that the bill does touch on that the current workers' comp system does not address is a return to work program.
Thank you.
Mr. Geisel.
I am, by profession, a healthcare provider who has provided work comp services to injured workers. And could you just describe what kind of work, what kind of case management an employee gets to help them negotiate the system?
Through the chair, we have, as part of our staff, we have workers' compensation officers who are part of our classified employees who are available to assist injured workers in knowing what their rights are in the system. For the most part, an injured worker under the current system is free to receive medical treatment of their choice. They can choose their doctor. If their doctor makes a referral to the specialist, they attend that specialist. There's no restriction on who they can get treated by or from or the nature or scope of their treatment. Now, as often is the case, the employer reserves the right to send the injured worker to a doctor of their choice. And sometimes you have medical disputes over whether a certain mode of treatment is necessary or not. And often when those disputes come before the board, when they can't be resolved between the parties, the board has a panel of medical experts that it can assign. And if the parties are still in dispute, the adjudicating body, the Workers' Comp Board, is free to weigh all that medical evidence and find what portion of that medical evidence, all, some, or none, is credible in awarding benefits to that injured worker or withholding benefits from that injured worker.
Thank you, Senator Giesel. Further questions for Mr. Monagle? Senator Menard?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The medical board, how often do they meet, or can they do it on a teleconference, or how big of a holdup? Because I'm just trying to visit this whole dispute, and how good is this for the business climate overall when we're in these kind of disputes? And I, as well, come from a medical background, and PPOs, they're never popular when a certain designated, and I understand the employees' right with their bargaining units to have certain physicians that they deem are going to be taking care of this and weigh in. So I guess that's probably my biggest struggle is I know how that works, and they will take a less amount, it was mentioned up to 30% less to be the preferred provider. But so I just, you know, this is also part of the stumbling back block. If you're waiting for the medical board right to meet and weigh in on did they get the right diagnosis or treatment, is that correct?
Through the chair, actually there is no board, no person, an injured worker has to await to approve their treatment. An injured worker is free to treat as they wish. Now, sometimes you may run into a situation where your doctor is telling you you need to have a particular surgery, and the employer may send you to their doctor, and their doctor's opinion is that you don't need the surgery. Certainly, the employee can go ahead and receive the surgery anyway, and if the employer refuses to pay because based on their medical evidence that says it wasn't necessary, we end up with a dispute before the board over whether or not the employer should pay for that surgery or not. But the party, the injured worker, does not have to wait for any board or group to approve their medical treatment. Delays that I see typically have to do with hearing back from the employer or their insurance company on whether they believe that something is compensable or not. Did that answer your question?
Mm-hmm.
Senator, further questions? Thank you. Senator Giesel.
So in the process that we have now, we have the option for an independent medical evaluation. How often is that used? What does that entail?
Through the chair, the independent medical evaluation can be done by the employer. Typically, it's the employer who asks for an IME. And that typically is based on the experience of a particular case manager or claims administrator. If they believe that there is sufficient evidence to warrant a independent review, normally the process begins. If I'm an injured worker, typically what will happen is the insurance company will ask me to sign a medical release, and then they'll take copies of my medical records, and they'll look at those records, and if there's something in there that's a red flag, for example, last year I was in a motor vehicle accident, and they believe that perhaps my current complaints are more related to that motor vehicle accident than my occupational injury, then they may ask for an independent medical examiner and ask those types of questions to determine, to do their discovery and determine whether or not there's contrary medical evidence to warrant the payment of a claim or not. But as I began my comments, vast majority of these cases are paid with no disputes.
Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you see in SB 116 the removal of that option from an employer or an employee, that is the option to ask for an independent medical evaluation?
Through the chair. Section 2 provides that the collective bargaining agreement can establish an exclusive list of medical providers, and an exclusive list of independent medical evaluators. Now, I guess the assumption that I make here is that the employer and the employee have agreed to the terms of the collective bargaining agreement and therefore have agreed to establish that exclusive list and abide by those terms of that agreement. So in that regard, I think that there is certainly some rights preserved by the parties because they aren't forced into these agreements. They collectively bargain these agreements.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Gisla, anything further? Further questions of Mr. Monagle? Is it the pleasure of the committee to continue public testimony to the next hearing, or would you like to wrap up public testimony now and we can provide if we have any questions in writing?
If there was something we could have invited testimony later also, but
right.
You know, so we could close it now, and if we need to invite
right.
It.
We could invite it. Senator Geisel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to hear from some employers, actually. We've heard from lots of employee groups. I'd like to hear from some employers.
Okay, and we can invite, if we can find some okay. Employers to testify. But that will wrap up public testimony for now, and the remaining testimony will be by invitation only. Nothing to come before us. There was a ton of stuff to come before us, but nothing more to come before us. And we're adjourned at 3:31.